In the opening to Michel Foucault and Noam Chomsky's debate on human nature, Dutch philosopher Frans Elders said, "All studies of man, from history to linguistics and psychology, are faced with the question of whether, in the last instance, we are the product of all kinds of external factors, or if, in spite of our differences, we have something we could call a common human nature by which we can recognize each other as human beings." On today's episode of the Podcast of Things, we will be exploring the same question of human nature, adding a psychological angle to the philosophical and linguistic lenses offered by Foucault and Chomsky in their 1971 debate. I'm joined today by three senior psychology majors, Michaela Bamba, Owen Vegas, and Alex Kutchins, to tackle this topic. Do y'all want to introduce yourselves?
Sure, yeah. My name's Owen Vegas. I'm from Portsmouth, Rhode Island. I grew up there my whole life.
Oh, yeah.
Now I go to college at Trinity College in Hartford, Connecticut. I'm a psych major, and I'm excited to be a part of this podcast.
Excited to have you, Owen.
My name's Michaela Bamba. I grew up in Ethiopia. I was there for 10 years. I was in Seattle, Washington beforehand.
Oh, yeah.
Psychology major, math minor, and I'm very nervous and excited to be here.
No need for nerves. Alex?
I'm Alex Kutchins. I'm also a psychology major, as he said, but I am really interested in animal behavior, so I'm very excited to discuss that side of or point of view.
Oh, yeah. All right, y'all. So let's kick it off. Did I pronounce your name right, by the way?
Mostly.
I kind of butchered it. All right, well, take the pronunciation from her. So we're going to start a little bit. Well, why don't we start first with kind of what brings you to psychology and what experiences have you had with the question of human nature in your classes, if any at all?
I guess to start with what brought me to psychology, I've always been interested in, I guess, listening to people's problems and I always try to figure out people's psychology or like the reasons people do things. I guess that's always been very interesting to me. And what was the second part of the question?
And like, have you talked about human nature at all in your classes? And if so, how? And maybe you could also say a little bit. Alex mentioned she's really interested in animal behavior. I know you're doing some great research on attention, correct? Mm-hmm. And some other things.
Yeah.
Soon to be doing some great research on depression too.
Yeah.
Yale.
Okay.
At Yale. Don't forget it.
I guess human nature is one of those things that's very philosophical, right? We didn't really dive into that a lot in my psychology classes, but I will say that I don't necessarily believe that there is a human nature in the way that people typically think about it. I think that it's more like the nurture side of the debate or the nature side of the debate. And there's...
Wait, isn't the nature side of the debate... human nature?
No, the nurture side.
The nurture side of the debate. Okay. Yeah.
The very similar words.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So, nice.
Michaela.
I actually came into university not wanting to study psychology. I was originally very STEM, very math, and thinking econ. But then I took a Psych 101 class with Owen, actually, just because I needed another credit, and I really loved it.
That's awesome.
I've worked with kids my whole life, so I really like developmental psychology, psychopathology, abnormal psychology in children and adolescents. And my sister's adopted, so I've always been very interested in the nature versus nurture debate because I've witnessed so many differences between me, my brothers, and my sister.
That's really interesting. Alex, you touched on a little bit, but what brought you to psychology?
Yeah, so I've always been really interested in the animal perspective. And shockingly, we've talked quite a bit about human nature in some of the classes that I've been in because it brings up the question of what is the difference between humans and animals, really, and the cognition behind that.
Yeah. All right, so, well, let's get into it. I think Owen preluded a little bit, and I might be on the same side as him. We'll see. But so why don't we start off with, do you think there is such a thing as human nature? Why yes or why no? Anyone who wants to take a stab at it?
Sure.
Go for it.
Yeah, I can go first. I would say yes, but a very, very hesitant yes. I think there's a lot of evolutionary evidence that has shown biological tendencies that are completely universal across development.
Across like, culture.
Yeah, and across culture, like language acquisition and just like cultural transformation and the translation of cultural tools and passing down generations. But I think human nature is also really hard to define because there's so much variation both individually and in those cultures.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's hard to pin down anything that is unanimously human nature across all cultures and across all people.
Oh.
But I will say that there are things that do tend to be like human nature, maybe if we're not defining it in a steadfast, hard definition, that there are things that seem to be human that other animals or creatures don't necessarily.
But then that might be more like human tendency rather than human nature.
Right.
But well, like, what are some of those things? Well, actually, Michaela, why don't you go first before we start into the nitty gritty?
I would argue that there is.
Oh, yeah.
Just to play devil's advocate.
Just to play devil's advocate here. Yeah.
That there is some aspect of human nature, especially, as I said, I'm very interested in developmental psychology. Mm-hmm. And in one of the classes I'm taking right now about abnormal developmental psychology, one of the things that they talk about is this sense of belonging that all humans kind of yearn for. And they talk about that in a sense of like human nature, especially because they talk about it in terms of survival. In order to survive, you need that sense of identity, you need that sense of belonging, you know, and there's that survival instinct in terms of like reproduction, for example. Like, it's a very subconscious like trait, but what you look for like in a partner, for example, romantically, is linked to the need to reproduce.
Well, that's interesting, because what about people who are homosexual? It's a tough question, and this speaks to what like Owen was saying about it's hard to define a human nature.
Yeah, I think even with like homosexual relationships, it's still fulfilling the need of companionship that we've been evolved to actually require. But I think on the flip side of that, there's also the discussion of, is human nature linked to the extreme violence that we've seen with humans that isn't with any other animal?
Well, this is also interesting because Michaela brings up the great point of, like, reproduction. Because then it also goes back to what Alex was saying about, like, well, maybe that's part of human nature, but it's clearly not uniquely human nature. You know, like, lots of animals reproduce. And the violence aspect is really interesting to me from a political standpoint, because I'm a political science major, for those tuning into Podcast of Things for the first time. But it's really interesting to me from that perspective, because I'm always skeptical of it, because it's usually used in my discourses that I'm involved with to be like, oh, well, it's just human nature. They're all just going to rob and kill and steal from each other. So, like, the only thing we can do is just go and, like, is put the army there and put the police there and stop them from murdering each other. And I'm really skeptical of that belief because I don't think it's true. It's kind of like the Thomas Hobbes argument. But at the same time, I see what Owen is saying about, like, there's certain tendencies. And as I read the debate between Chomsky and Foucault that we talked about in preparation for this, I was kind of compelled by Chomsky's argument that, like, there are some human nature senses of justice that maybe can be, like, productive to look at, as opposed to just thinking, like, oh, human nature is just all horribleness. So in that case, I might be more sympathetic. But to set the grounds for the debate, it seems like, for the debate, it's becoming a debate, I think. It sounds like, more like a conversation. It sounds like, so you're yes, human nature, Michaela. Like,
to an extent.
To an extent. You're yes.
I'm a hesitant yes.
Hesitant yes. You're a hesitant no?
Yeah. I'd say I'm probably more so on the no side of things, if you were to.
Okay, so I'll be an unsure no too for now, and so we'll have two and two, but we'll see if our minds change at the end of this discussion. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I wanted to add on to what Alex was saying about how, like, the violence that humans display versus animals, it's real. Like, it is, like, we've seen it a lot in class, especially, like, humans are way less merciful in the way that they kill animals specifically and each other, and it's because, like, the disconnect we have from, like, technology and the weapons that we've created, but no other species does that. That's just humans.
So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I think weapons are such a huge part about human nature itself, and we've talked about this before, because in the development of humans, when they started creating tools, it enabled them to do A, mass killings, and B, it enabled them to kill without actually being super connected to the animal and without actually having to physically go and kill them. And that created a distance and a sense of superiority within humans that is definitely still present today.
So, like, as opposed to having claws, for example, or, like, teeth to kill another animal, you mean, like, you'd throw a spear or you'll shoot a bow and arrow or something like that?
Yeah.
I would say that's more a byproduct of the invention of tools rather than something about human nature.
Right. That's true. Human nature, or is that an outgrowth of it?
But we're very much like distancing ourselves from the kill, making it like less merciful. I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that.
Right.
Yeah, I think it has definitely affected the way we act today based on aggression mm-hmm. itself mm-hmm. because we have a lot of these tools and it doesn't really matter if you're the biggest or the strongest anymore because everybody can handle these tools. So it kind of it transforms from being the biggest and the baddest to being able to kill the most, being the most brutal. It could be more like potential for like mating. That's genuinely we're animals after all.
But do you think that being brutal is like something that humans have a natural tendency towards? Because I think that it's kind of the opposite. I think if you look in totality, there's a lot of human brutality. Well, maybe you can speak to this, like humans being violent versus animals. But I think that like in your everyday, you tend to see a lot more social collaboration than you do competition between humans. You tend to see a lot more, if you were to count them, for example, you tend to see a lot more acts of compassion than acts of brutality. But yeah, so you guys mentioned like, that humans are much more vicious than other animals. Well, what have you like learned about that, or what kind of informs that idea?
Okay. Well, what I have read mostly is that evolution has favored both aggression and cooperation, and it depends on the context of which that is emphasized within the society, just based on different survival needs.
This is interesting.
One thing I found most interesting was that the difference between humans and animals could be said to be A, theory of mind, and B, abstract thinking.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
By that, I mean, with theory of mind, you're able to understand that it's like self-awareness.
Okay.
And with that, it can be taken to violence, which means you can understand others' pains, which means you can inflict more pain on them because you know what it feels like. There could be more calculated cruelty, psychological torture. But there's also an expansion of empathy depending on the context because there could be a community that is more emphasizing, you know, do others what you'd want done unto you.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, this is really interesting to me for like several reasons. First of all, I want to emphasize the insight of what Alex just said there about how evolution favors both aggression and cooperation. Because typically we think of like, you know, aggression is the law of the jungle and like the natural selection is just who can kill who better. But obviously some people have, like there's an anarchist philosopher named Peter Kropotkin who said, you know, actually the law of nature is really not so much competition, but collaboration. But it's interesting that you're emphasizing both, because I think that's probably more accurate, but at the same time makes me wonder, like, how could that be possible logically? Like, how can it favor both aggression and cooperation? Because they're kind of at odds, aren't they? Like, when you do aggression, then you're no longer doing cooperation. I guess you can do cooperative aggression.
I don't think they're like opposite ends of the spectrum. I think there's instances where you can be aggressive but still cooperating. Like if you look at a big CEO making an aggressive business move, they're cooperating with their partners.
Right.
And being aggressive at the same time.
Right. So it's like who you're cooperating with.
Yeah it's like good. A group thing.
But ultimately when you're that big CEO, if you're like in a band society or a tribe, when you're being aggressive towards other people, yes, you're collaborating in that aggression, but then you're not collaborating with the people you're being aggressive towards. So it's like maybe some balance of it is what's best evolutionarily.
Yeah. I think it still stems back to way back when we didn't have all the resources we have today. Because group competition was, I think, fairly necessary.
Right.
We see both extreme violence and extreme altruism in societies now, and I think it's because we're kind of mushed together. All of this group competition could create in-group cohesion, but also out-group hostility, which was necessary if you look at chimpanzees who are fighting over the same things that we are, resources, reproduction, food.
Shelter.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, like, one of the things I also want to add on to that is that, like, yeah, you know, maybe there are some ways in which, like, types of violence have decreased now that we are more affluent society in general. But there's also types and levels of violence that exist in like modern history that could have never existed otherwise. Like I went, what was it, yesterday, maybe 2 days ago, with my sister and my parents to the World War II Museum in New Orleans. And it's like, that's crazy. Like nuclear warfare, napalm firebombing, like that stuff that could never have existed prior to the incidence of like an affluent modern society. But then it begs the question, like, is that our human nature?
I don't
then?
Think that's independent to human nature. I think if animals had the capabilities to create tools of mass destruction, they would eventually come to the same problems that we do, like killing each other in mass for over land or food or resources. I think that's just animal nature.
I'm not entirely sure about that. I can definitely understand where you're coming from.
It's a big what if.
Yeah. I like, think what I said before, I'm going to bring it back, about abstract thinking was really important for my argument, because what I'm saying is that there's only been like a clear understanding of humans having that. And we can't say for sure if some animals have abstract thinking. And by that, I mean like thinking outside of the here and now and like really concrete ideologies, like that sort of thing.
Like, but empathy, or
that's where empathy comes from.
I think animals have empathy.
No, not like empathy. Sorry, more like I think religion, nationalism, and racism has all stemmed from abstract ideologies being like they're not like us, and that justifies like a lot of dehumanization.
I think animals have those like racist tendencies, if you were to call it that. Like, there's outgroups in animal societies, and
it's a question I think of. Is there a difference in kind between, like, out-groups and racism, like you're saying? Or is it a difference in type? You know what I mean? Like, so are we saying that... Because maybe racism is just, like, a more complex version of animal out-groups, like Michaela was saying. Or maybe it's a whole different thing, like Alex is saying.
I remember my point. Oh, I was just going to say, like, that kind of, like, racism and that, all that kind of stuff, I feel like that's more of a social...
Construct.
Yeah. Social program that humans have created, like...
For sure.
More in, like, the animal kingdom, I feel like it usually relates more to, like, physical capability, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Like, it's not as much of a you look different. Maybe you have the same capabilities, maybe you have the same abilities, whatever. But because you look different, you're out of the group. Right. Like, that's not what it tends to be. It's usually, from what I've noticed, it's usually more like, oh, you can't provide food for this group, so you're no longer in this group kind of thing, if that makes sense.
I think I was going to say something like fairly similar, and by that I mean I think humans are unique in the sense that a lot of this in-group fighting doesn't have anything to do with the basic needs that the animals are fighting about, the resources, the shelter and whatnot. Because like cats, for example, the white cats are usually the ones that are bullied by the other cats and have the least chance to reproduce. Fun fact. But they're also the most likely to be blind. And so I think there is still a sense of like DNA and reproduction that is still ingrained in them, which has been completely transformed by our society today because we are no longer fighting so hard for those resources.
There are still people.
Who of course.
Like, I still think that that's a lot of where violence stems from. But the question of the white cats, actually, isn't that kind of to your point, Owen? Isn't that kind of like racism amongst animals?
But what she's
saying
is
more so because they're blind.
It's because they're blind.
They're not all blind.
Not all blind.
It's different from humans because that is a specific functional difference, whereas in racism, or like whereas in difference in races has no...
Well, there really is no such thing as difference in races.
Right. But, like, if you discriminate against somebody because they're black, that's not because there's any inherent factor of a black person making them less capable of surviving.
Right.
It's but with
well,
the blind cats, there
someone
is.
Someone less capable of surviving?
Because they would drain the resources.
Yeah. But
like
you also
a blind cat. Yeah.
Want to like reproduce with them, for example,
right?
Because
the
offspring would be able to survive.
Yeah.
I think we also really still want that whole like dominance hierarchy thing, and it's easy to prey on those who are weaker than you.
And so you think cats are the same?
I think so. Yeah.
So you think that like the nature of all things is dominance and hierarchy? I mean,
that's
I think it's a part.
That's more on my.
That's what
yeah.
you think.
Yeah, I think it's a part of a lot of like in-group societies, and that's just natural. And I think that was a main factor in the human brutality because we were all coming together. And how do you form a hierarchy when everybody is supposed to be equal?
Right. But the question is, why did we want to form a hierarchy? And also, not every society forms a hierarchy. Just throwing that out there. Like, yeah. There have been non-hierarchical societies.
That's true. That's true.
But to bring it back to what you were saying before, Alex, so basically what you're saying, correct me if I'm wrong, is that, like, yes, monkeys, for example, like chimpanzees, also exhibit violence, but they are incapable, because of the lack of abstract thinking, to produce the same scale or types of violence as humans can. And so basically that means that, like, humans have some sort of nature that is conducive to a greater amount of violence than animals are because of the abstract thinking.
Can I just add one thing? Yes. Before Alex answers? We are one of the very few species that hunts for sport. Very few other
That's true.
Species
That's true.
Hunt for sport or hunt for fun. It's for survival, it's for food, it's for resources. We're one of the few species that hunts purely because we want to.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting.
I think, no, there. I think on Michaela's point, it's entirely a sense of ego that has been perpetuated since we've become so distant with all of this, like, livestock, and all of the factories are further away from the houses, right. And we don't have to see all of that process, and we don't actually have to do much to go out. We're not hunting. We can go to the grocery store and just get a bunch of food. And that's just such a difference than it was before, and it really doesn't make you think about where everything is coming from.
I don't think that's necessarily an inherent difference in human nature, though. I feel like if people saw every day the animals that they were killing, they would be more similar to animals in the way that they feel empathy for the things that they're killing, or they're more connected to the kill.
No, I completely agree.
Yeah. So maybe, like, we're artificially creating human nature, but not necessarily a genetic difference.
No, I think it is in the context of culture, but the culture we've created has been, like, completely different and separate from animals.
I agree with that.
Well, this is the key, because I think, like, so there's two things, right? On the one hand, you have that, like, humans are doing something uniquely different from animals. So then the first question is, like, well, was there a time at which humans, to Michaela's point, like, really only killed over resources, over food, for example, and, like, for example, didn't hunt for sport? Perhaps, I'm not sure, I don't know if any of y'all have the answer to that.
Humans were prey for a majority of our, like, lineage. We were prey, we weren't predators.
That's really interesting, and that's also, like, what, you know, I talked about how Thomas Hobbes, this is a political philosopher who said that, like, oh, everyone just will kill each other all the time in the state of nature. Rousseau, French philosopher, by contrast, said something along those lines. He talked about how humans are the types of creatures that if they're walking in the woods and they hear a branch break, their instinct is to run, not to attack it, which I think is an interesting point. But then there's the second question. So, like, basically, you answered the first question. So that makes it seem like initial human nature, at least, did not have this same divorce between hunting for sport versus hunting for necessity. And this, like, the great example of this is, like, you can see a lion and a gazelle drinking at the same watering hole, like, the lion or a shark swimming around fish. Like, if it's not hungry, it's not gonna eat. Which is interesting. But then the second question becomes, like, well, is the very fact that we have a society where we do hunt for sport, where our factories abstract the killing and hunting from us, is that a product of human nature? Or is it somehow, like, the product of humanity that is detached from human nature? And, like, how could that even be possible?
Well, I mentioned this at the very beginning. Like I said, I developed a psychology very interested in, and the nature versus nurture debate is something that I've always been interested in. In the sense of the nature versus nurture debate, however, I see nature, like, human nature, as more of, like, our genetic predispositions, our biological, like, makeup, rather than what you're describing, which to me sounds more evolutionary, if that makes sense.
But don't, like, aren't the things that we evolve, so to speak, like, dependent upon the blueprint that we have? Like, to Owen's point, maybe, like, let's say this system of factories that we have, right, where it detaches, now we're hunting for sport. Maybe that's only possible for humans, and it's not possible for sharks for whatever reason, because they don't have opposable thumbs and stuff. So then does that mean that it's a part of human nature? And maybe it's just, like, semantic.
Well, as I said, we're one of the few species that hunts for sport, but we're not the only one. For example, dolphins. Dolphins,
right? Orcas, right, too.
Orcas, too. Mm-hmm. They kill seals just to, like, play ball with them kind of thing. Yeah. So it's not just within us, but we are, like I said, we are one of the few species that does it.
Right.
Yeah. I think it's still mainly, like, an adaptive strategy, really, because humans, we've progressed way further than before. Like, it wasn't that long ago when we didn't have all of these guns and we were still the prey. And because if a tiger was going into the village, you really stand no chance, even if you had a spear or not. But now we're here and we have all of these weapons. And I forgot the question. Can you say it again?
I kind of forgot the question, too.
It sounds like you're talking about, like, how our needs are met now.
Yeah.
So,
and I had somewhere to go with that.
Yeah.
Well, I have somewhere to go with it in the meantime, unless you wanted to go, Owen.
No, go ahead.
I'm kind of skeptical of the, like, I feel like there's a way in which we're making a monolith of humans that is not quite accurate. Like, in one sense, yeah, humans are one of the few species that hunt for sport, like orcas, for example. And I don't know if this is true for orcas, but it's also true that not every human hunts for sport, for example. Like, I feel like Owen probably has no desire. Owen is vegetarian. He probably has no desire to hunt for sport whatsoever. And similarly, like, we're saying, like, oh, today, now our needs are met. Like, some people's needs are met, but clearly not everybody's needs are met. And that's, but to bring it back to what Alex is saying about the resources, like, this is precisely why there is a very tight relationship between economic deprivation, poverty, wealth inequality, and violence. Yeah. Like, if you look at where violence occurs in the world, it's in concentrations of poverty where resources are scarce. So, like, perhaps in that sense, it does follow the logic of human nature. But then, to Owen's point, like, World War II doesn't follow that logic at all. It's, like, just some ideology.
Yeah.
So what do we make of that, is the question.
So we're trying to understand what the violent, or it seems like humans have a violent nature about them. Or there's something
See,
that humans have.
I don't like that.
I don't either. Yeah, I disagree with that.
I disagree.
That.
It just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I don't think it is a violent nature. I think what I said before is that the culture can either make or emphasize the violence, or it can emphasize the cooperation, because those are the two ways we've survived throughout
That's
history.
Fire. Yeah, you're spinning.
So much to say about this.
Go.
So much to say about this. In class, one of the things that I've, like, studied the most, again, within, like, my interests, mm-hmm. is, like, individualist cultures versus collective cultures.
Mm. I was just talking about that, too, in class.
And I think that, like, I have a very unique view, having grown up in Ethiopia, which is very much a collective culture.
Right.
And spending a lot of my adult life in America, which is very individualistic.
Mm.
Very interesting, just the sense of community here versus in Ethiopia, for right. example. And like Alex said, culture plays such a huge role in it. So while we do say that, you know, maybe there is this violent tendency in humans, you know, maybe this is bias, but I've seen a lot more of the, like, aggression, the competition in the U.S. than I have in Ethiopia
right.
or Kenya, which is where, like I said, I've spent 14 years of my life.
Right. Anecdotal, but, like, a lot of people talk about that. Actually, I did a podcast mm-hmm. with Zobron, who's also from Malawi in Africa, and he's had a similar assessment. And, like, philosophers have long
yeah.
talked about how Africa is more collectivist and less cutthroat.
And it's really interesting because I see it on, like, a daily basis as well.
Huh.
Like, even in the school system, it's not who's top of the class. Like, what did you get on your exam? It's more so, like, like, can you help me study for the next exam? Like, oh, congratulations. Like, that kind of stuff,
right.
if that makes sense. Like, there, even in my daily life as, like, a student, I've seen a difference in culture.
Yeah. I see people get mad at each other over getting a better grade than somebody else.
Yeah.
Like, you get mad
yeah.
at
somebody.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think the U.S. is absolutely, like, the prime example of a culture that would foster competition over cooperation.
Yeah.
Right, and it does. It's a very hugely violent society, the U.S., despite being, like, extremely affluent, and usually affluent societies have less violence.
But I think that also raises the question, as, like, Alex mentioned, aggression and cooperation have kind of, like, fueled the evolutionary change of humans.
Right.
But in different cultures, like, it differs, you know what I mean? So what is human nature in,
right.
like, African culture versus,
mm-hmm.
like, more Western cultures?
Right.
Like, it's different.
Because if there's a human nature, then it should persist through
exactly.
both cultures. This is actually a good point. So there's a scholar who researches and talks about human nature. He's a psychologist at Harvard named Steven Pinker, and his research is really bad. I wouldn't recommend it. Every time I read a book by him, I'm like, how did this guy get a PhD? It's actually heinous. But he does have a really helpful – have you heard of him?
No, his name is just Pinker.
But he does have a really helpful – Now I'm thinking about his last name. He does have a really helpful, like, binary that he gives in, like, his kind of literature review type thing. And he's like, some people think that humans have a certain nature. And they usually think of it as, like, you know, brutal, like we've been saying, violent. But some people think humans are a blank slate. You know, they harbor cooperation. They harbor violence. And it depends upon their culture, which emphasizes one or the other, for example. And then I think Steven Pinker ultimately, like, falls somewhere in the middle. But isn't it true then, Alex, based on what you're saying, it's kind of anti-human nature, no?
I think I think I would say there is such thing as human nature that's universal, like I said, with the language acquisition. But I think one thing that's really mainly universal with humans is the transfer of knowledge. And I think that's how we've gotten so far. And that is one reason why we're having so many problems within our society, because we've progressed. We know how to do so many things now, and now it's more of a question of how are we working within the society when these people, not everybody, of course, but have their needs met.
Mm. I think the question that you asked, again, is very much alluding to the nature versus nurture debate right. that Owen and I talked a little bit about. Do you have anything you want to say first?
No, go ahead, please.
I just have so much to say about nature versus nurture. And, like, I can totally take a step back if we want to continue with this evolutionary conversation. I know. When you talk about humans are a blank slate and then their culture, whether they're in a more violent society versus not, that's the nurture part.
Right, right.
You know, and, like, the nature question is, like, as I mentioned, those genetic predispositions, the biological makeup, like, does that influence how we grow up? And another, like, anecdotal little fun fact for you guys. As I said, my sister's adopted. My mom's adopted. So I've seen a lot of, like, comparison between it. Mm. And while there is some, obviously, like, similarities. So my sister, we adopted her at 14 months. I don't know if you know this. The prime, like, plasticity of your brain is the first 2 years. Okay. So the first 2 years of life, like, your attachment style is formed, your... What else is formed? That's just, like, a very critical period. Temperament. That's just a very, very critical period.
Right, right.
So we adopted her 14 months in. So
quite young.
It is quite young, but that's halfway, more than halfway through this, like, critical period. So obviously, like, she spent some time in the orphanage. She spent some time with her biological parents. And I see the difference of those first 14 months of her life versus me and my brother's first 14 months of their life, if that makes sense. Like, for example... Our temperaments, as you brought up. My sister is so much quicker to get angry than anyone else in my family. And it's got, like, it's to the point where it's, like, very noticeable.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then that's, like, is that in her nature to get angry more often? Because we were all raised the same starting from 1 year old.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, like, it's the same with, like, my mom. She was the first one to go to college. Nobody else in her family ever valued education. So where did she learn to value education like that? Because she didn't grow up in a home where they valued education, if that makes sense. But I do think that, like, while nurture, and, like, research has shown that, like, nurture, your social environment can mitigate a lot of the biological factors. Mm. The biological factors still play a role.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, like, who's to say that the reason that she gets angrier quicker is because she has different genes than you and your family?
Because we were all raised the same from 14 months.
But here's one thing, though. Like, me and my sisters are different, too. Like, we get angry at different times, and we're all biologically similar. But I guess to your point, well, I guess two parts of this is that no one is ever biologically the exact same, and no one's nurture is quite exactly the same either.
That is true.
It's like,
that is true.
You know, slightly different times and stuff. But in general, yeah, I mean, like, that illustrates the point that, like, clearly there's some combination of nature and nurture at play.
Yeah, and I can think of, like, numerous examples. Like, academic-wise, for example, me and my brother's STEM majors. All of us, science, STEM,
That's really interesting. Because I think of that as, like, a nurture thing. Like, oh, like, a family is like, oh, you should be doing STEM. It's more important.
So, yeah, my dad was STEM all the way through to his PhD. Very much valued math in our family. My sister... Never been good at math, never cared about math, never wanted to do math, that's kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's really hard to tie down to being a culture versus biology argument because, you know, my sister, and we're
complete opposites. Same mom, same dad, allegedly.
I'm you kidding. Guys look so
I love
similar.
You, mom.
They look so different.
We look so different. For I'm a brunette. She's blonde, green eyes, all that sort of stuff. Completely different interests.
She's 5'10".
Alex's mom is under the cosh right
now. Hi, mom. But no, she's always loved the arts, and while like that's. Like, I have too, a little bit, but...
You're, like, one of the best artists I've
Yeah, ever. You are very artistic, but, maybe not in your academic life, but you draw.
But it's in a different way. And yes, my main interest has always that been from the sciences. But yeah, but I guess why would she not get the same love of the sciences that I guess you could say stemmed from my mom, because she was also a psychology major.
That's fair. That's fair.
So basically what we have, though, in terms of human nature is, like... Not only across cultures, like Ethiopia versus the United States, we have differences, but even within families, we have differences. So, like, is there really anything that we can pin down as being part of human nature? I mean, I think one of the only things we've agreed upon so far is that, like, there seems to be a relationship between material deprivation and violence, like, throughout the world, even now and in the past.
Absolutely, though. Because, yeah. Like, as I mentioned, the first 2 years of your life, such a critical period. And one of the things that really alters, like, your brain chemistry is whether or not your needs are met, both, like, physically and really socially.
I've never heard of that.
So, like, I'm sure you've heard about, like, if you, as a baby, if you're crying and your mom only sometimes comes to comfort you, you will develop differently than if your mom always comes to comfort you.
It changes your attachment style.
Yeah, it changes your attachment style. It changes your temperament. It changes... fundamentally, like, so much about you during those first 2 years of life.
Yes.
I think going on the point of culture is always answering the question for people of who am I, what am I supposed to be doing right now, how am I supposed to be acting in relation to the people around me right now. And if you are learning from a very young age that you need to rely on yourself, then that's going to change the way you interact with others in the future.
That's interesting. This is also interesting in terms of, like, what you mentioned, Michaela, like, okay, so your first couple months of your life are going to kind of, like, dictate, you know, how your relationship with others and thus maybe your relationship to violence. I recently just saw, like, Yale Law School put out a podcast, which was a professor talking about how in the criminal legal system, like, psychology is so important and mental health issues. But this is another excellent example of, like, the connection between criminalization, violence, and developmental psychology, because, like, it depends on how you grew up, whether your needs were met or not, or whether people had the ability to meet your needs. And so that's another factor that, for me, showcases the fact that, like, this is why I'm skeptical that violence is some constitutive part of human nature, because it's like some people aren't, right? Some people had the proper type of mothering when they were young. Some people had the proper type of affluence. Their needs were met. And, like, all four of us in this room are, like, extremely not violent beings in this world.
Right.
I think there's, like, a clear and obvious correlation between people who commit violent crimes and their upbringing and whether they received the support that they needed or not.
Right.
I agree completely.
I think that type of education can also foster a lot of empathy, because if you're learning about a lot of, like, horrific things in history, like the Holocaust, and you're like, what? How would you feel if that happened to your friends and family? Then obviously you're not thinking of these people as an outgroup.
That's interesting.
I just wanted to bring up, again, another little anecdotal thing. I'm reading a really interesting book from the perspective of a child psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Boy Who's Raised by a Dog. Every chapter is about a different child that he treated. But one of them is about this teenage boy. I forget his name. But he went on to rape and murder two young women. And was sentenced to life in jail. But he had an older brother who had a family, who was successful in business and all this kind of stuff. They were exactly the same genetically. The only difference was when he was being raised, he was around grandparents and aunts and uncles and was very, like, supported. Mm-hmm. His younger brother, who committed these horrific crimes, for example, the brother who committed these horrific crimes, this was after the family moved away from that support system, and he was very neglected because the mother did not know how to be with a baby by herself. So she would leave the baby home alone for, like, numerous days at a time. So even though they had the same family, they had the same genetic dispositions, like, they grew up
more different than anything.
Interesting.
Yeah. I've actually heard a lot about collectivist cultures and how mm-hmm. it can influence resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Like with immigrants coming, say, to the U.S., for example, they still have that social support system that they had back. That they'd have back home of like the extended family that they can reach out to. So there's like enhanced problem solving skills. Whereas someone in the US maybe is thinking that they need to do all this by themselves because it's an individualistic culture and your individual achievements are celebrated.
It comes back to culture. Like family is a lot more celebrated, is what I'm learning, in African cultures, for example, than individualistic cultures. A lot of times, like, women are chastised for starting a family and jeopardizing their career, but then they're also chastised for prioritizing their career and not.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, it's very cultural.
Right. And not only that, the cultural collectivism versus individualism seeps into the political sphere because the laws are made with, like, a certain orientation of the proper family in mind. Like,
yeah. Did you know there is no law in the U.S. saying that mothers need to be paid for maternal leave?
Yeah, really? And it's like one of the rare countries. Yeah, most other countries have that.
Sorry, this is something that drives me up the wall.
It's insane, yeah.
You don't need to get paid, and there are like numerous cases of mothers being fired because they took too long to recover from giving birth.
Right.
Literally one of the few countries that isn't like protected.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's just like other things too, other policies like the child tax credits follow along these lines, or like whether or not you can legally like take time off work to, or well, not take time off work, if you can legally like receive benefits from the government to take care of a loved one. Like sometimes it's like an uncle or a cousin can't do that because they're not considered part of the proper nuclear family.
Or paternal leave. Very short.
Right. Yeah. So maybe that's conducive to the parts of, like, human nature that are more violent, maybe. I mean, I'm conjecturing. I don't have a study, but.
Well, I think one really key example of culture is also the military. Because you're bringing a lot of these people in, and you're saying you have to defend your country, and nationalism is also a part of abstract thinking, being like, this is our in-group. And the out-group is what we're being trained to fight against.
Right.
And that could only be done with a strong emphasis on culture and a strong emphasis on these are your people and the outside people are the enemy.
Right. And exactly to your point, like, people across the world, not just in the U.S., but, like, are convinced that they need to defend their country. Like, this abstract thinking goes so far that they'll be across the world on offensive missions in the name of defending the country. You know what I mean? Like, that abstraction can do that much work, which is interesting.
Again, just like I've never seen a culture that is so rooted in nationalism, if that makes sense. Like,
as
yes,
the U.S.
Yes. Oh, like, of course, Ethiopia, very proud to be Ethiopian. We don't salute the flag every morning.
Yeah, that's really interesting to me now that I look back on it, like the saluting the flag every morning.
Yes, in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I don't know the Ethiopian anthem.
It goes back to human nature, actually, because it's like, you know, some people will see that. And this is what frustrates me about human nature is I think people, like, tend to just see what's around them. Oh, it's human nature. Like, not necessarily. Like, and so people, you know, might take that and say, oh, well, you know, it's human nature. Humans love a leader. Like, they need to have a leader. Oh, they need to have a symbol. So, like, maybe not, for example.
Yeah, I think really it's just linked to fear because, like I said before, it wasn't that long ago that we didn't have the tools to defend against, like, big cats, and we were kind of screwed if one just came up to us.
Alex has, like, an irrational fear of big cats.
I love big cats, but you're done if you're up against one.
Not me.
But she's so
not a one, of course.
She's so right, though. Fear fuels so much of, like, human behavior.
Yeah, but the systems that we had that were telling us, oh, there's a big cat, run away, those are still here. We didn't evolve past that. So there's this displaced fear, and we're putting it on to a bunch of other people.
That's really interesting. I mean, could we evolve past that fear? And then, okay, well, anyway, let's bring it back to human nature and start to close out. So I guess what I want to talk about in finality is we basically discovered nothing about human nature.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Which I think is interesting because, like, you know, you talk about it and it's like, well, you know, you try to have a systematic discussion about human nature, but how can one even do that? Because it's so hard to pin down what it could be every time, you know, We've tried to offer up an example of what might be human nature. It seems like there's so many counter examples, like, you know, hunting for sport is one of those examples.
I feel like even between the three of us, we all have different definitions of what human nature is, even though we all study at the same school, the same subject. Yeah.
I think actually I might have switched up on my opinion at the end.
I think so too.
I don't think I can agree there is a human nature. I think it's the same as all animals in that we've adapted to survive based on our environment and based on our circumstances, but our circumstances are so strange and so like on knowledge stacked on top of knowledge that it becomes a big issue, because now we have to look at sustainability and like how can we keep all of these people alive and what does that mean for the other animals?
One question before I get to my final question. Here's one idea of human nature. The Romans and to some extent ancient Greek philosophers thought of human nature as, they thought of human nature like in terms of humans' purpose. And so like they thought of things like, okay, knives are for cutting and, you know, oil lamps are for illuminating things. And so therefore like the human nature must be something that humans can uniquely do. So they settled on reasoning, like using reason and logic. Is maybe using reason and logic the answer to human nature?
I don't think so.
I do not think that there is a universal human nature. You know, the more I kind of talked and the more I listened, I realized, yes, I do believe that there is like still a nature versus nurture debate, but the nature
is just nature, not like human
nature. It's not human nature. That's, and it's very,
I think I would agree that it's just nature.
Yeah. Human nature. Yeah. And like I said, nurture can mitigate the effects of nature almost completely. Like, there's been so much research done on that. So, yeah, I don't think there's, like, a universal nature, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Right. I think it's the passing down of knowledge that has made this so complicated and so culturally constructed. But it's still, at the end of the day, how are we surviving within our society right now? And what tools do we need to actually live in this society and be able to get all our basic needs met?
Yeah, I
just think that humans have a huge tendency to overemphasize the importance of things like human nature, like they're superior to other animals or they're separate or there's some defining feature of humans that separate them from the rest of the natural world. Maybe it's a comforting feeling that you're superior or something, or it justifies the way that you treat animals or I don't know what it is, like
we
but
have logic and reason that they don't.
Right. Yeah. I just disagree with that notion that there's some defining factor that separates us from animals. If there was an animal that could learn how to reason, I'm not convinced that animals can't reason either.
Right, like what about octopi?
If like a monkey could learn how to reason, which I'm sure they probably can, would they become human? Are they human nature?
Right.
Like,
and it's like,
I don't
do you
think
mean
so.
By reason? Like, don't monkeys and dogs and cats reason every day? Like, this banana's lower down the tree, so I'm going to get that one.
Yeah.
It's closer. Like, isn't that reason?
It's almost like we're grasping at straws to find something, just anything that sets us apart from animals, which I don't.
Yeah, I think, but that's the discussion of abstract thought. But the problem with that is that you can't prove whether animals have abstract thought or not because you can't ask them.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and another problem with it, like, I'll play devil's advocate for a second and then I'll rejoin the group.
Please.
It does seem like humans, you know, it's hard to draw the line, but it seems like humans clearly have some level of abstract thinking that transcends other animals. Like, that's why humans, you know, are in this situation in the globe that they're in our ecosystems and our food chains. But at the same time, if that, like, really abstract logical reasoning is your criteria of human nature and what it means to be human, then, like, what do you do about babies? Like, babies don't have that yet. What do you do about people who, you know, like, maybe have intellectual disabilities? What do you do about people who might be in a coma, for example? Like, are they not human? I mean, it's complicated. So, like, maybe there is no human nature beyond chromosomes, or maybe, I mean, according to, I had a Roman philosophy professor who basically said, like, yeah, the Romans would say, like, yeah, babies and people who have intellectual disabilities aren't humans because they lack the key human thing.
Yeah, they lack the reasoning or, like, morality.
Okay, but then who's to say that me and you reason the same? Like, is one of us correct and one of us is wrong, thus
I think it's
just it, that you can do it.
I think it's
way.
An interpretation of our culture, but
But then as you said, dogs, monkeys, they all have their own sense of reasoning as well. Like, who's to say that they're wrong and we're right, if
right.
that makes sense.
But do you think we can do, like, more of it than they can?
But there's no line
there's
to
no
be
line,
drawn.
Yeah, yeah, it's just kind of like Fugazi. That's
yeah.
true. Yeah. But
it's like, we're better than animals. Yeah, we can reason better than, so what?
Yeah, and it's also, then the question becomes, like, exactly what Michaela's saying. Like, better. What do you mean by better?
Yeah.
Maybe monkeys actually reason way better because they're not paying taxes and they're not having World
mass
War
genocide.
II.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
I think me and Michaela actually talked. We took a class together before, and it was about the adaptability of animals and, like, how successful we are in our environments. And objectively, yeah, we're really successful. We spread mm-hmm. across the globe, but so have, like, cockroaches.
That's
cockroaches
true.
Have been really, really good, and they're really durable, and they're really good at their niche. So what's to say that they aren't superior
yeah,
to us?
That's a great point.
Bacteria have been ruling the world for
yeah,
4 billion
exactly.
years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mosquitoes have killed more of us than can count.
Yeah. Well, another good example of, like, the you can't test abject theory is ants. Like, we just basically,
yeah.
like, people or bees, we just decide, like, no, that's not the same as humans because of X, Y, Z. But, like, we don't know really what they're thinking in their
yeah.
little ant brains.
Exactly.
We've
and
just decided that it's,
like, social learning.
Yeah.
Right.
There's such complex things, especially with bees, because they can direct the entire hive just by dancing to where the flower patch is. They can
right.
direct them there, and they can actually tell them that this is, like, a place outside of what's present in here and now.
Right.
Which could maybe be an example of abstract thinking, but is it really thinking if the bee is just pushing towards, like, immediate resource needs?
But isn't it true that we're just, like, quick to assume that, like, oh, it's a bee, so its thinking is simple? It's just, like, people tend to call it instinct instead of true reasoning,
yeah,
for example.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you know? Like, what if the bee looked at us and, oh, no, it's just instinct. They're just – they just have an instinctual need to do this, for example. Like, maybe it's a little harder, but – one of the things, Alex, you brought up language earlier, which I think is interesting, because Noam Chomsky's mm-hmm. idea of language is essentially, or his idea of human nature, rather, is he thinks that there's, like, innate structures insofar as, like, humans are capable of learning languages and having creativity that's dependent upon, like, rules that exist in their brains. Like, they're able to, like, know what words mean and know that words do not mean other things. They're able to know that these sounds, like, any baby that's learning any language has some innate capacity, he thinks, to, like, learn this particular language, or learn, not this particular language, learn any language, rather, and it can start to understand that, like, these sounds are a way of communicating with complex symbols. And the other thing he says about it is that, like, as a human, in terms of linguistics, you learn only a certain amount of words and you have only a certain amount of experiences, but then you are able to use language from a young age to describe experiences that are far beyond anything you've experienced, to discuss ideas that, like, are far beyond anything that you've come into direct contact with. So maybe that is
yeah.
human nature. Are you compelled by that?
I think that's true in the sense that's much different than what we've seen from a lot of animals, but there's also the sense of that's what we needed to survive in our society now. Like, bears, for instance, they
mm-hmm.
are kind of similar to us in the sense that they don't know anything when they're younger, and they have a long period of growing up from babies to
right.
adult bears in which the mom has to actually physically teach them.
Right.
And so with the transfer of knowledge in humans, you can teach so much more, and that requires more cognitive abilities than a bear who is learning a finite amount of things just from the previous generation.
Can I just interject? I have a prior commitment, so I have to go.
Okay.
But, yeah, thanks
we'll
for having
up.
Me.
Yes, thanks for being here, Owen.
Yes.
Bye,
see you, Michaela.
Owen.
It's been a pleasure, guys.
It's been a pleasure to have you, Owen.
Bye, Owen.
Bye, Owen. Any final thoughts?
Any final thoughts? Yeah, concluding statements?
I think that, I guess, I have no thoughts. Yeah.
Fair enough. Okay, Michaela, you had a thought about bears.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's really interesting that Alex brought up the fact that, like, humans need to be raised by their parents. A lot of species don't need as much guidance as humans do.
But a lot of species do, and I think that's where language comes into play.
Did you know that children that are bilingual overall have a better capacity to learn more, if that makes sense? They
really?
Have better, like, brain plasticity because of – but you have to do it in, like, childhood.
Yeah,
But yeah, I always thought that was really cool. Like, language plays such a huge role.
It absolutely does.
But do humans is like this. So clearly, I think we can all agree that this linguistic thing Noam Chomsky's talking about is some type of nature that is of humans. But the question, I guess, is it human nature or is it like we famously postulated 15 minutes ago? Maybe it's just nature. Like maybe all – because like don't other species also similarly have the capacity to communicate beyond their scope, kind of like beyond what they learn directly?
Yeah. I think one fun fact is that parrots name their babies. And yeah, they're different squawks. And I think there's a certain level in which we've relied on language so significantly more than other animals who have a better sense of smell, a better sense of sight, a better, like, we're slower than most animals, we're weaker than most animals.
No. Yeah, Alex.
So yeah, I think language has been our superpower, honestly, and that's affected our development, but that doesn't make us different from the other animals. It's right. just a different path that we've taken.
Dolphins have language too, though, no? Like
they do. They do, but not in the same sense where we can talk about abstract thoughts.
Interesting. Once again. Right. So like we have a kind of different.
Yeah, they can warn about danger. They can like call a certain dolphin, but that doesn't mean they can discuss philosophical things.
Right, right. As we're
Yeah, or pass down that knowledge, even if they could discuss things.
Mm. I don't have a lot to say in terms of animals versus humans. This is very much Alex's expertise.
No, I've been talking a lot.
No, I'm glad you are. Fantastic. I mean, you guys have a nature versus nurture question. I'm ready.
Nature versus nurture. I think, well, we can start to wrap it up, especially since Owen unceremoniously left us.
Yeah,
so
that was
sad.
Really rude.
No,
yeah. I'm kidding.
I love you, Owen. I think this is an interesting... I think Chomsky's formulation maybe then is interesting. It seems like the one that we've thrown away least quickly, probably because he thought about it and spent many years researching it. So it's like a little bit more developed than the ones that we came out with immediately. But nonetheless, insofar as like human nature is usually used to talk about like, oh, humans are, you know, violent. Humans are selfish by nature. It seems like the language doesn't really do anything for that. You know what I mean? Like that part still seems like a blank slate, to use Steven Pinker's words.
Yeah.
Pinker.
I think the problem is that we're capable of going to the extremes now.
Because
it's still human nature, but right now we are still like agents of ourselves. We're capable of introspection. We're capable of developing our own moral sense and also looking at other people's and determining if we agree with that or not. And that's obviously going to create a lot of conflicts, but that's also going to create a lot of cooperation in the sense that you find people who have the same beliefs as you.
Right. Well, there also seems to be like some general kind of universal, not fully universal, but like some generally universal beliefs. Like it's bad to torture people. Like the vast majority of people think that. Even the vast majority of torturers think that, right? Because they're like, oh, well, unfortunately, I have to do that. Well, you know, now I'm just conjecturing. I don't know what the vast majority of torturers think. But like lots of people who are in the military, for example, committing atrocities and war crimes are like, well, we have to defend the homeland. You know, like it's not like they think it's good.
Yeah, but that's still what we were saying before with cultural context. You're able to create an in-group and an out-group that is going to justify behaviors that go against what we can think of now, which is moral justification in our moral sense.
Yeah. So I think to wrap it up, I have just one final question, which is, does it matter whether or not there's a human nature? Why yes or why no?
I think it matters to an extent because it opens a discussion for, are we actually different than animals? And that is really important for A, how we interact with animals, and B, how we interact with each other. And also, I think before I mentioned education can foster either aggression or awareness or like cooperation, depending on how you frame these conflicts that we've had before and what we've learned from that. So I think the education part is really important too in saying that it's not just human nature to be conflicting with these other groups. It was actually a lot of these factors.
Right. Yeah. I agree. I tend to think that like my personal response is very similar to yours. Like I think it matters insofar as we, you know, if there is a human nature, I think it matters insofar as we
dispel false ideas of human nature, because I think that those ideas can justify a lot of really bad things, usually like bad political things, but bad social, cultural things too, about like, oh, well, you know, we have to do it this way because it's human nature for people to be selfish. Like, mm-hmm. I think it's important to emphasize that, you know, maybe we don't know what human nature is. We don't really quite know if there is one, but those allusions to human nature or like reliance on human nature are like powerful tools, because it's like, oh, yeah, I guess if it's human nature, I mean, what are we supposed to do about it? And it's like it's a persuasive rhetorical tool. So I think that like that's one of the places where like animal psychology and developmental psychology is really important, because how can you contest those with the studies that people have done on nature versus nurture on animals, for example, to kind of like disrupt the political work that's being done by those terms, basically?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm very much speaking to human nature in the nature versus nurture sense. And even just like with talking with you guys and thinking about it, the differences between like my sister and me, for example, mm-hmm. maybe, as I said, those first 14 months of her life, she wasn't with us. She's being raised differently.
Right.
And that is very much nurture. That's culture. But at the same time, as I said, my mom was adopted 6 weeks. She's very different as well. Like, I think that nature, maybe not necessarily human nature, but just individual nature, if that makes sense, right. In terms of biology, genetics, that kind of stuff, it does need to be considered,
right?
If that makes sense.
Yeah, and to your point, there's also seems to be a way in which like humans are different from animals, but I guess the question is how, and the question is it in their nature to be different from animals, or is it just like, you know, it's kind of like, is it a question of degree or kind? Like, is it that humans have a different nature from animals, or is it that we have a similar nature but like bigger brains and thumbs, for example? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's more our sense of awareness, because we have a sense of autonomy and self-expression that I think we have a lot more tools to actually be able to express, like culture, like the clothes we wear, how we decorate our space, which is a lot different from animals because they don't have those resources. And given those resources, I'm sure you could tell, like, individual dogs, they have different toys that they like, and people attribute that to human behavior, or like they're smarter and they're more like us. But
right.
Is that really true, or is that just how they've developed in their environment?
Right, like their own kind.
What about, I know that you've like talked to me about this before, there was like a reef or a coast or something, and all down the coast, fish evolved differently purely because of where they were. Genetically, mm-hmm. they were all exactly the same.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So is that like another example of like culture, kind of, if that makes sense? Because like the only difference between them was where on the coast they lie.
Right. And that changed their nature.
Exactly. They even look different, right. You know?
I think there's a difference between animals that have actually raised their young and animals that have like evolutionarily evolved differently. Because like you said, a different example would be these geckos that we saw. And one, like from the same branch of gecko, one was on the bark and one was on a leaf, and it was green and brown respectively.
Interesting.
So they have learned to adapt and live based on whatever space was available. And I think that's what we've done as humans, but it's gotten so conflated and complicated because we're able to discuss what that means. We're able to discuss we're able to discuss individual variation. We're able to see patterns between culture, but also a lot of differences between culture, in which we wouldn't see in animals because they're only through observable traits.
Right. And actually, it's a great question because it kind of brings it back to the language element. Like, maybe there's a difference between environment, which is what the fish in the reef have, and culture, which is what people have. And maybe that's dependent upon the use of language and, like you say, like the raising of young.
Well,
maybe
it's
the same thing.
Have you heard that, like, a lot of bilingual people, even first count experiences, they have variations of their personality based on which language they use.
I have heard that, yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's very, very interesting because, like, I'm not bilingual. I'm way too mixed to not be bilingual, which is, like, really sad.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, even my change in, like, where I am here versus, like, in Ethiopia where I have to, like, try to speak the language because I can understand relatively enough, I can get by kind of thing. Like, I think I'm way more, like, timid and shy. Maybe that's because I don't know the language as well. But, like, a lot of people that I've spoken to in my classes, for example, like, I've heard that Spanish is a lot more expressive. They have a lot more vocabulary.
No, it's totally
true. Yeah, so I've heard that, like, people tend to be more timid in English than in Spanish just because they have the vocabulary, they have the tools to express themselves better in Spanish. Different. Yeah, so, like, that's, like, a whole other question, but also just, like,
But it speaks to this. Like, things are so different based on culture, so maybe there's not some underlying nature.
Yeah, I think exactly what you were saying, what I said before about culture being a framework to determine who am I right now, what am I supposed to be doing, how am I supposed to be in relation to these people is exactly what you were saying.
Like, because everyone else is expressive.
Yeah, it's a different environment. It's a different way in which you were raised, so you're going to adapt to that environment the same way as these geckos, but it's going to seem a lot more complicated because of all of these cultural factors
so and passed down of knowledge. More complicated? Wait, sorry, you go
ahead. I was going to say, I have so many, like, culture questions now because the three of us were raised so differently. I have, like, culture questions, yeah, but that's, like, no, that's another discussion.
We'll have to do a part two of the podcast. So are you saying, like, the geckos basically, like, there's no different than language culture? It's just less complicated? Again, the question of, like, say, difference in kind versus difference in level.
I think because we've spread so far as humans across different continents, there have been so many different variations in how we adapt and how we build upon cultures. Yeah, exactly. And they're entirely different. And if they had the same cognition as us, I'm sure that they would be developing these different moral senses or these different traditions and this sort of thing. So I think it's mainly just how humans adapt to their environment that has created all of these cultural differences. And there is individual variation, obviously, which makes it really hard to pin down. Exactly, but how can we tell?
So then is what we're saying basically, like, human nature is just like a story that humans tell ourselves?
That's what I'm saying, at least.
I mean, I still do think that there is genetic biological differences, but like I said before, there's no universal human nature.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm becoming convinced by both arguments somehow, because it's like, on the one hand, it does seem like there's something, it seems like it's not just like difference in amount of knowledge or complexity. It seems like there's something different in kind, but then again, maybe the difference in kind is just like because we have so much more complexity in brain, so now we can do things like introspection. But yeah, I agree with you. Like, it's, there's no one size fits all. There's no definition you can give of human nature. And I think it's pretty clear that, at least to some large extent, even if human nature is real, it's largely used as a story we tell ourselves, I think, is like how it ends up.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is, like, human nature is unique in a lot of ways, but it also isn't unique at all.
This camp, it's just like geckos, but
it's just more. it's basically the same, but I feel like we've studied it more and it's become a lot more complex because of all these factors and these cognition and these traditions that we've built upon for millions of years.
Well, it's the very question of, like, is the difference between geckos and humans the holding or the ability of to abstractly reason, or alternatively, is abstract reasoning just like a word we made up to describe something that goes on in our minds and, like, we just assume that everyone else doesn't have it? So it's like,
yeah, that's always really hard to come by.
All right, so how about some closing remarks, final thoughts? What do you want the world to know about human nature?
I don't think humans are all that special, personally.
No.
It is. Michaela?
I don't know. I've said it, like, a million times. Just, there's no universal human nature, and nurture and the way that we are raised, our social environment, can mitigate most issues or symptoms.
Right, like negative facets of human nature.
Yeah, so, like, while human nature is a very interesting topic, I don't know that it necessarily manifests itself still in our lives today, if that makes sense.
Interesting. So we've, like,
Yeah.
I guess my closing thought, I think what I've learned from this, from you all, is kind of be careful about how you use human nature. And in fact, I would actually argue, that's what I guess that's kind of what I used to think, but now I'm kind of the opinion, like, we should not be using human nature to justify anything, because we don't know anything about it. Like, we don't know anything about human nature. There's really no way to say, anytime you try to study human nature, even in abstract theory or violence, you're, like, bringing to it your preconceptions about human nature.
You're still going to be biased. Right. It's still going to be through the framework of the culture you
were
raised
in. Yeah, of the culture you're exactly. So
I guess I'm taking the nurture side of the debate mainly. I know that's kind of a slightly different thing, but obviously interrelated. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think be skeptical of human nature and reserve it for philosophical discussions. Keep it out of political policy and such.
Yeah.
Cool. I think we should end by singing the new jingle.
All right.
Wait, can you sing one more
for
time,
people who made it this far, the great Michaela Bamba is going to do the new Podcast of Thing jingle.
Okay, fine. Solo. Okay. I can't sing.
Go, Michaela.
Jacob Lore, learning more.
It's going to be at the start of every podcast.
Jacob Lore, learning more.
Oh, yeah, it's great. That's going to be the start of every Podcast of Things episode.
Oh, no. Good.
Well, thank you both for joining me. Excellent conversation.
Thank you so much for having us
thank
and preparing
you.
For this, Jake. We appreciate it.
Yes. Well, we'll see you next time on the Podcast of Things.